Yeah, so thank you. So as you can see from my few references I wrote up there, what I'm going to talk about today is rather old stuff and rather trivial compared with many of the talks we've heard here, so I have to apologize. But on the other hand, it is sort of what's built into the Monte Carlos that are used for showering from hard matrix elements. And so it's important for us to bear in mind the limitations and the features of what's built into those programs. So I thought I'd spend some time trying to focus on the approximations that are made in Monte Carlos. I'll concentrate initially on part on shower Monte Carlos, in particular of the kind that we have in the Herwig Monte Carlo, but then I'll talk a bit about, I hope I'll have time to talk about so-called dipole formulation of the shower, which is an alternative which is getting more popular nowadays and has some advantages, as you'll see. So let's start, so I should write the title, I guess, but I already have a problem here. I have to use the local language, I guess, so color coherence and art on showers. So that means I'm really going to concentrate on the color structure and how it interacts with the dynamics in these shower programs and show you the approximations that are made. So let's start. So first of all, I'll start with soft gluon emission. Well, it'll all be about, pretty well all be about soft gluon emission. And then I'll talk about jet rates. First of all, in the so-called double logarithmic approximation, which means in terms of the, I've written up there a few of the jet rates in E plus E minus in the so-called KT algorithm, where we have a jet resolution parameter, a Y cut, which I will define. And then we can develop the jet rates as perturbation series. And they have large logarithms, of course, order by order. And the leading logarithms are log squared for every alpha S. And so, first of all, I will talk about these log squared terms and then discuss how the next terms, the next to leading logs in the sense of the expansion there, can be computed as well. And we'll look at a few features of
what's
those.
What's your observable? This is just like KT with a cut or?
Pardon?
What's your observable? This is a jet rate with some.
This is just the number of jets in E plus E minus in this case. So this is the two jet rate. Three jet rate, four jet rate, and so on.
And how are your jets defined?
With the KT algorithm.
Okay.
That means the relative transverse momentum of any two jets. Yeah. So I'll clarify that.
What was Y cut, Brian? Maybe you said it.
Okay. Well, for our purposes, Y cut is just the relative KT of two jets, relative PT of one relative to another. So in this logarithmic approximation, that's precise enough. Okay? It's scaled by the hard scale, sorry. So Y cut, so KT is, actually KT squared is Y cut. KT min is Y cut times the hard scale squared. So Q squared, whatever that may be. In E plus E minus, say the central mass energy or the hard jet energy. Okay, so then I will talk about the so-called next to leading logs, or what you might call next to double, I suppose, NDLA. And then I'll talk about this formulation, which is more modern, which is the dipole shower. And probably that will use up my time. Okay, so first of all, soft gluon emission. So we've got some process here. You've seen this diagram many times. some blob, some process with N external legs. And if we're talking about soft gluon emission, we're going to make an icosahedral approximation. So we're going to have a pair of legs here, we'll call them J and K, which emit some soft gluon I. And then schematically, the M plus one cross section is going to be given by the end cross section times some factors. Now, if this I has momentum, Pi mu equals, say, omega qi, then it'll be a d3qi over 2 pi cubed times 2 omega I. I'll just call that omega, I guess. Okay, d3q over, and then we'll have a g strong squared. And then we'll have a sum over j and k, not equal to j, of a color factor. Now, I'm going to write all my color factors in terms of these color charge operators that those of you who have been in earlier talks have seen. So this is going to be a correlator, tj dot tk. There's an overall minus sign. And then we have pj dot pk, the iconal factor, pi dot pj, pi dot pk. Okay, so let me just remind you that this blob, there's color conservation, so this blob satisfies the sum of all the tj's is equal to zero. And that's going to be important. And so this correlator you get just by, because of course we're working with cross sections rather than amplitudes, so we get this product here. Now let's define an angular variable. So I'm going to define pj dot pk. Everything is massless, so this is going to be just omega j, omega k times 1 minus cos theta jk. And I'm going to call this factor zeta jk. So of course this thing here just becomes 1 over omega squared times zeta jk over zeta ij zeta ik. So writing everything out in a more simple form, I should say, of course, that this is a color operator, so this is not strictly a cross section. But so part of our problem in dealing with color in this process is to find out how we can treat this color operator in a way that's a good approximation but actually diagonalizes it. So let's write this out in a more sensible form. So now we have d omega. Yes, we'll see. I mean, if you have any color basis, then yes, sure, really, it should go on the other side. Since we're going to diagonalize it, it won't really matter. So we have a d omega over omega, because we get from the 1 over omega squared, and from the omega squared here, we get just a factor of 1 over omega. And then the g squared and the pi's and so on come out to be just what I call alpha bar, which is alpha s over 2 pi. Mm-hmm. And then we have a d omega, an angular integration, over 2 pi. And then we have, now we have a sum over j and k, have some angular integration of this iconal factor, which now is an angular function. So zeta jk over zeta I zeta ik. So this angular integration, of course, there's an integral now over a cosine, which is the same as an integral over a zeta. Say we can have zeta ij or integral over zeta ik. And then we have also an azimuthal integration, say d phi. So this thing we can write as d zeta d phi over 2 pi. So let's look at integral d phi over 2 pi. If we do the azimuthal integration of this Eichner factor, then we can use an important result, which is that if you integrate over the azimuth with respect to the direction of particle j, so call this d phi ij, the integration around the direction of j of 1 over zeta ik, then this is equal to 1 over the modulus of zeta jk minus zeta ij. That's just a result you can easily verify. Now, so therefore, let's write this term in terms of two pieces which separate the two collinear singularities. So we'll write it as a term involving this, that is zeta jk minus zeta ij over zeta ik plus 1 times 1 over zeta ij plus the same thing with j interchanged with k. You can easily check that that gives you the same expression. And now we see that if you azimuthally average here, then you get this thing over its modulus. So that's a theta function, which tells you that this thing is confined to a region after azimuthal integration. You only get a non-zero contribution if zeta ij is less than zeta jk. So we're going to say that this is approximately. So we're going to get approximately d zeta ij over zeta ij times a theta function of zeta jk minus zeta ij plus the same thing with j interchanged with k. So it's crucial in this game that the approximation we've made is an azimuthally averaged one for each external line. Yeah, no. Any observable which is integrated in that way will be correctly given. Any differential distribution of this gluon which is not integrated in that way, of course, won't be. I mean, if I have, so as I say, a jet rate in particular, which is integrated over all these azimuthal angles, is going to be correctly given by this, and we'll see.
The fact that you average the two terms with respect to different angles, that's not a problem.
No, because as I say, if the thing is totally integrated, then I can do the integral any way I like. So I can. This is an exact relation here. I can integrate each term in a different way.
It's not fully differential.
No, it's averaged. So you see what happens now. I've got my two lines I and j and k, say j and k, and I've said that that my radiation is now confined to two cones, which if I were taller I could actually draw, but unfortunately I can't. But you get the general idea. I've got two cones here. And inside each cone, I've got some radiation, and outside these two cones, I've got nothing. Now, of course, that can't be a true differential distribution of the radiation of this soft gluon. So it's. But on the other hand, if I have a complicated process with many different configurations, and I'm looking at some observable which is averaged over a large number of configurations of the harder lines, or if I got some complicated shower, which is being, and I have an ensemble of them, then this averaging is probably relatively harmless, and I can make this approximation. And that's the approximation which is made in the angular ordered part on shower. So that's the basis of the angular ordering. Now, how does it work with the color? We've seen that we're still left with this color correlator here. We've got the two terms, so now we can just write one term. So now we've got this correlator here, which I see I've left out, but anyway, it's crucial that it should be in here. So we've got two terms, so now we've got something like d sigma n plus 1 is d sigma n times our alpha bar d omega over omega. And then we've got just sum over j of d zeta ij over zeta ij theta. Sum over j and k not equal to j of zeta jk minus zeta ij. Bunch of cones, every pair of external lines gives us a cone, and that's the approximate distribution. And again, I've got minus 2 tj dot tk because I've absorbed the two terms into one. So what about this correlator here? Well, let's suppose I start with, let's take a simple case like qq bar. So my two cones here are quarks, a quark and an anti-quark. Then it's easy to see if this is a color singlet, say coming from LEP, then I've got that TQ plus TQ bar squared equals zero, and that tells me right away that my correlator here, just expanding out, is just equal to twice TQ squared, which is 2CF. So I can imagine that each cone is emitting with a strength CF. Well, that's the situation in that case. And there's no leading color approximation or anything there. And the same applies, of course, for glue-glue. Say, if I have Higgs production by gluon fusion, then I will have a color singlet of two gluons. And this correlator here will be 2CA without any approximations. Now let's go to QQ bar glue, which is a bit more interesting, or in general three objects which make a color singlet. So now for display purposes, I'm going to still show them all coming out in the same hemisphere. So I've got my Q and Q bar and gluon looking like this. Say, of course I can have all kinds of configurations. And now I've got my cones. So let's look at the cones associated with the quark. So I've got a cone between the quark and the gluon, and then I've got a bigger cone around here from the quark to the anti-quark. Okay, so let's calculate the correlators in that case. Now we've got the property that the sum of the three is a color singlet, and that still can be diagonalized, then all these correlators can be diagonalized because if I expand this out, then I've got 2CF plus CA from the squared terms plus twice the sum of all the correlators, Q bar plus QG plus Q bar G is equal to zero. And what's more, if I dot any one of these into the whole thing, say TQ dot TQ plus TQ bar plus TG, then I get this is equal to CF plus the sum of two correlators. So that's TQ dot TQ bar plus TQ dot TG is equal to zero. And so I can subtract this thing out of here and get my correlators in this case, for Q bar G. And I get, therefore, that T Q bar dot T G is equal to CA over 2, I guess. Let's just make sure I get these all right. Yeah, with the minus sign, minus CA over 2, and that's equal to TQ dot TG. And finally, the other one, TQ dot TQ bar, is CF with a minus sign, is minus CF plus CA over 2. So let's look at the, first of all, the emission into this big cone. Well, the emission into this big cone has this QQ bar correlator, so with a minus sign. And so that's actually got a strength CF minus CA over 2. And of course, that's a number which vanishes in the n goes to infinity limit. In fact, it's just minus 1 over 2n. So relative to the leading term here, it's suppressed by 1 over n squared. So this is a non-leading color contribution, which furthermore has no collinear singularity, because it's only in this region outside this big cone here. As long as we include the whole radiation in this smaller cone going from the quark to the gluon, which is the sum of these two correlators here, which is just, again, CF. So we have a radiation from the quark, which is got the same strength as before, as long as we limit it by the direction to the gluon. And then we've got a color non-leading, non-collinear singular contribution here, which is outside that and has a negative sign, which we can't actually deal with probabilistically anyway. And then what about the emission from the gluon? That's interesting. So the emission from the gluon looks like the following. We've got a cone going to the quark and another cone going to the anti-quark. Two concentric cones here, and if you plug in the correlators here, you will see that it's got a strength CA over 2 in the region between the, in this case, in the larger cone, whichever it may be, it's got half the strength that it has in the smaller cone, which is the full color factor CA. So when we treat this probabilistically, we're going to neglect this term here, but we're going to keep all the radiation from the gluons as long as we remember that they only have half the strength in the bigger cone and the full strength in the smaller cone. So the gluon, so to speak, radiates. And so when we have, as you'll see, we have an angular ordered shower, it's going to radiate with half its strength until it hits this other color-connected line, and then it's going to get its full strength. So it's clear, I think, that now, of course, in processes like 2-to-2, we can't diagonalize all these color correlations. So essentially, we're going to have to make the same approximation that we made here, which is that in leading color, we can associate color flows with the hard process. And then, say, in this QQ bar glue case, we would draw a diagram like this. And every external line will have a color partner. And basically, the rule is that for a quark, it's going to radiate with strength CF into the cone limited by its color partner. Whether that's a quark or a gluon, it doesn't matter. But for a gluon, it's going to be a little more complicated. It's going to radiate with half its strength off one side until whichever side is connected to the more distant, the bigger angle color partner. And then when it hits the angle associated with the other color partner, which has a smaller angle, then it's going to turn on the full thing. So it's equivalent to each side of the gluon radiating with half the color strength.
This is what is done in Monte Carlo.
This is what's done for the hard process. Now I'm going to go to the next step, which is to show you a shower.
Yes.
And then we'll see that actually the approximations are a little bit better there, in a sense. So let's now look at two gluon emission. Okay, so I think I'll erase this. Well, it means that I have to take my hard process. Suppose I have a matrix element squared for some 2-to-2 process, matrix element squared for general n, I call, say, MN. Sorry, MN, I mean the number of colors, MN. Then, of course, I can evaluate M infinity. For n goes to infinity, and I can write that as a sum over color flows unambiguously. And then I'm going to define a probability for a certain color flow by saying that my mi n by definition is going to be mi infinity over m infinity times mn. So the approximation is that I take the full finite n matrix element squared and I divide it up into color flows according to the large n approximation, and then this thing here will have all the right singularities for that color flow, but it will be, there will be no interference terms, so there will be no suppressed, no non-leading n terms. But there will be non-leading n terms in the actual cross section, so I won't make a mistake. Okay. Well, so this is a source now for my soft emission, right? Because I have to associate probabilistically each color flow with a set of jets, and the jets are going to radiate into these angular regions. Okay.
So a color flow is for cross sections,
not for this is a matrix. This is a matrix element squared, of course. Yeah.
So, but the 2-2, like in Pythia, for example, don't they just use the exact matrix element? Why do you need?
Yeah. Well, so do we. So do we. But everybody has to say what's the color structure, and the color structure can't be diagonalized probabilistically. So this is the approximation in which you can do it. Right. So nobody drops the non-leading terms in the hard process cross section, and in fact we can define this thing to any fixed order. But sooner or later we're going to have to attach a parton shower, and a parton shower has to know a definite color structure, not only for the showering, but also for the hadronization, because we have to know how to make color singlets one way or another out of this shower.
Just said is already more advanced than what you said before, because before you just needed to know where is quark, where is gluon, and then you had probabilities, but now you have the full color flow.
Yeah, which means, well, I have a starting configuration from which I can do this analysis in general. I don't need to make this approximation here because I have the exact, and similarly for three gluons, incidentally, I have the exact. So any color singlet, three particle state. Okay, so let's look at two emissions now. I see this is taking a while. Never mind, I can speed up, I think, later. But I think it's worth going through this next step because you'll see then how the shower works. I mean, at the moment we've just done one gluon, and that's not much of a shower, so let's do two. So now we're going to associate, as I said, every emission with an external line, with a cone. So now we have, J has emitted I in the sense that it's assigned to its cone here. So we have J here, we have I here, and we have K here, and now we're going to emit another gluon from this process, call it L. So we have our, schematically again, we have our m plus 1 differential cross section going to m plus 2, so that's one step in the showering process, and we're going to have alpha bar squared and d omega I over omega I d omega L over, sorry, no, this has already been absorbed in the cross section, so it's just one more alpha and a d omega over omega over omega L. And now we have our sum of contributions, and let me look at the contribution from the emission of this system, first of all, IJ. So actually, what's happened, I should have labeled it more correctly. J here has emitted this thing I, so its color has become, or it's become J prime. So of course, this is a soft gluon, so we can say that PJ prime is approximately PJ. At least we're going to use the direction of this line. We're going to say it's more or less the same, but of course we can't assume that the color's the same because it's emitted this thing I. So the color correlators involved will be different now from what they were before the emission of I. So we're going to have actually some over. So let's do the IJ or the IJ prime contribution from those two lines, and so we're going to get. So that's just going to be these two terms. We'll have minus 2t ti dot tj prime times xi ij over xi li xi lj. I'm going to put the. I'm going to do the integration. Let me write it out here. So I'm going to write this as zeta ij of d zeta li over zeta li plus d zeta lj prime, which is the same as lj over zeta lj. Okay, and then I have a sum over k not equal to I or j prime of minus 2t I interfering with k, which goes up to zeta I k d zeta l I over zeta l I plus a term with j prime and k, which goes up to zeta j k over zeta lj over zeta lj, plus terms where the emission is off other lines, other combinations of external lines, which will basically be the same as they were before this emission, so they'll be dealt with in the same way as in the earlier case. But these two terms, these terms here, I want to rearrange because I want to collect terms in zeta li and collect terms in zeta lj. So I'm going to write this square bracket thing here as in the following way. I have now minus 2ti dot t j prime. So I'll write this as minus 2ti dot tj prime plus sum over k dtk of the integral up to zeta ij of d zeta li over zeta li minus 2tj prime of ti plus the sum of tk of the same kind of thing, zeta. Again, zeta ij, and then I have d zeta lj over zeta lj. And then I have terms, of course, with different angular regions, which are the pieces left over in these integrations, which are in fact differences between the cone ij and the other cones involved. So it's rather crucial to see what we have to do with them. We have minus 2t, ti dot sigma tk integral. Now we have integral from ij to ik And then we have minus 2 TJ prime prime dot TK integral from IJ to JK, okay, of a d zeta over zeta. This is Li, this is Lj. Okay, now, look at these color correlators here. We want to use the fact that Tj prime is equal to Tj minus Ti. Okay, so this thing here is exactly equal to, and then the sum, of course, sum of Tk is equal to minus Tj, because the whole thing is a color singlet. And so if we plug that in here, we can see that this thing is exactly equal to Ti, and this thing here is exactly equal to Tj prime. So these two terms are diagonalized. This gives us the color charge, twice the color charge of this line. I, which is a gluon, so this whole thing is just 2CA, and this thing here is 2, sorry, I got the minus signs. This is minus, minus, so this is 2CJ, whatever J is. So either a quark or a gluon. And these are now integrals inside this cone from the radiation from these two lines without any approximation with their correct color factors, and I'm left with these pieces over here which are outside that cone. So let's write this. So we can write this as, okay. So let's write this Tj prime in terms of Tj minus Ti. So now we see that we've got a Ti dot sum over Tk in both these terms. We've got the difference, so we've got altogether minus 2 Ti dot sum over Tk of the difference of the integrals zeta ij to zeta ik minus the integral from zeta ij to zeta jk of those integrands. And then we've got this term left over, which is minus 2 Tj dot Tk of the integral from zeta ij to zeta jk. Okay? Now this thing here, you see, has exactly the correlator associated with coherent radiation of J and K. So this is an internal line formally, but this has the color correlator associated with these two lines, and it's integrated over a cone, actually the difference of two cones, so the angular region outside this cone. So this is radiation off this line, or it can be represented as radiation off this line at an angle bigger than this here. So if this is theta, this is theta prime less than theta. So if we do an angular ordered part on shower, then we will actually pick up this radiation as part of the evolution before this splitting here. If we just order the angles, then we use the color correlators exactly as we did for the primary process. So this is a piece of the radiation which is already included in an angular ordered shower, although formally it's a coherent radiation of the later emissions.
And it's color non-diagonal, right? It's,
pardon?
It's color non-diagonal. Right?
Well, it's color non-diagonal. On the other hand, if this is the, if this thing was, say, a QQ bar and or a QQ bar glue, then we know that it's not, then it is diagonal. And then, so as I say, iteratively in the part on shower, it's already been dealt with correctly in the earlier stage of the shower, and we can iterate this argument and say that this term is always correctly treated if we angular order and use the prescription that I did before of the associating the cones with their correct color factors. And the only approximation that we had to make was that we had to associate a color flow, leading end color flow, with the primary hard process. And this term here that we've neglected, of course, is a non-diagonal correlator, but it's multiplied by this function here, and this function is the difference of two terms, neither of which has a collinear singularity. So this thing actually vanishes completely in the limit that I goes to j. In other words, it's not just finite in the collinear region of I and j prime, but it's actually zero in that limit, and so it actually loses two collinear logarithms. So this term is down by two when we do our log counting, or collinear singularity counting. It's down by two logs. It has two soft logarithms, but it has no collinear logarithms. In fact, this integral, if you now integrate this thing over d zeta, if you integrate this thing over d zeta ij, then it is precisely an Li2 of a half zeta jk. And so it's just a number with no collinear singularities. So this is the level of approximation in which we throw terms away dynamically, that we have to throw away terms which in the cross sections or in the jet rates are down by two collinear logarithms relative to the leading term. We can keep terms, as we see, with one which are non-leading by one soft logarithm, but we can't keep these terms which are two logs down. And this is what prevents us from carrying out the whole exponentiation procedure for this jet rates, for example. And this is the level of approximation that is made in parton showers. So let's just do an example of a jet rate using this angular ordering method, and you'll see then how it works. If I do the, I can very easily do the three and four jet rates. So at the moment, of course, all I ever talked about was real emissions.
Right.
Yeah.
Does it mean that you can have next leading log in the cross section for any process? In principle, I mean, is it, well, this is carefully chosen jet target. Whereas your
partnership
argument seems to be extremely generic.
Yeah.
If I keep four logs, I go to.
Well, as I say, I neglect terms which have lost two collinear logs. That's all I can say. So any quantity which is sensitive to that approximation, I'm in trouble. But for example, you can show, as we did in this paper here, 20 years ago, that the collinear, in the extreme collinear region where you're getting, structure functions or fragmentation functions near x equals 1, then this same prescription gives you the correct anomalous dimension in leading order. That's sort of trivial, but also it gives you the correct singularity structure at next to leading order. In that sense, it picks up some, it correctly picks up single log terms. You see, the issue there is, what is the momentum distribution, say, of the leading quark in a quark jet? And that's a single logarithmic type of thing where you've integrated over all the soft emissions. But this prescription, as we showed, still works for the collinear logs. In that case.
So, related question: this series you wrote, if you were to use like Cambridge-Okin or anti-KT, is it the same?
Anti-KT certainly different. Cambridge-Okin, I think, turns out to be the same, as far as these logs go.
Certainly,
anti-KT is different. Yeah. But it can be done, I think. Yeah. I think it's still okay because
Engler ordered shower for an anti-KT rate.
Yeah, I think you can do that for these logs, because the anti-KT rate is again in this approximation correctly evaluated by this procedure. It's sufficiently integrated, and in fact, it's rather trivial to see that the so-called abelian terms, the ones that have CF log squared to some power, do exponentiate in K KT and anti-KT with different coefficients. And that's actually done in my recent paper. Yeah, but I think there are interesting things to do with anti-KT, actually, both in this approach and in resummation. Jade is a mess, right? Jade is...
it's a mess here, but you basically say you can calculate...
Yeah, I can calculate Jade rates. Yeah, I can calculate, and in fact, a student of mine, I mean, almost as long ago as these papers, calculated the double log terms in Jade, and they have horrendous coefficients that you can't understand in any simple way, because Jade creates jets in regions where there are no partons and all sorts of strange stuff.
Because of expansion, right?
Doesn't exponentiate, and if you take a configuration, this is one of the things that led the experimenters to abandon it. If you take two soft emissions in the opposite hemisphere, Jade can still make you a jet out of those two gluons going up there. Okay, so let's look at KT jet rates. So it's very simple if you want to do the three jet rate. So I've got one gluon emission, now I associate it with these two cones, and so I just have, if this jet energy is E, and this is ZE, and this angle is theta, then obviously I get alpha bar, I've got an integral dz over z from 0 to 1, integral d theta over theta, from 0 to 1, and my coefficient is now actually, so I've got 2 times, and then there's a 4 CF because d theta over theta is, it's d theta squared over theta squared in the small angle approximation here, so actually I get a factor of 2 from the angular integration, and then my jet resolution now just tells me that ZE theta, which is the KT of that, has got to be bigger than epsilon, say, where epsilon is defined as the square root of y cut, which is equal to KT min over E. Sorry, I'm using epsilon, but it's not a dimensional regularizer, it's a KT regularizer. Okay, so this is an easy integral. This gives me just integral dz over z. Now this thing here tells me that theta has to be bigger than now the e goes because I normalized, so this has to be bigger than epsilon over z. So that's log z over epsilon. So I find that I get this thing here is a half log squared epsilon, which is, for my definition of L, is actually 1/8 of L squared. So I get exactly alpha bar CF L squared, which is the double log term there. Now let's do something more interesting, which is the four jet rate. So I've got three kinds of contributions now. I've got these abelian type ones. I've got the ones, another abelian set where the gluons come off in the same cone. And then I've got this non-abelian piece here where the gluon emits. So let's call these A, B, C. So A is just, so RA is just a half of R3. Squared, because it's just that diagram squared, and so that gives me a quarter CF squared L to the fourth. Just calculating the coefficients now. Now this term B, then we've got to remember is angular ordered, so that becomes slightly less trivial. But again, it's a CF squared, obviously. So I've got two diagrams like this, so I get 2 times 4 CF squared, and now my integral is dz over z, d theta over theta. Again, I'll integrate from theta goes from epsilon over z. This thing will go from epsilon, and now my theta prime integration only goes up to theta. And I have to resolve both of these gluons from their parents, so I have this is z and z prime, so I have just z theta minus epsilon and z prime theta prime minus epsilon. So this integral gives you just I won't go through it all, but anyway, it gives you 1/4 cf squared l to the fourth, same as this one. Now the non-abelian graph, that's more interesting. So we've got now I've got this thing is emitted with energy fraction z, and this thing has say zz prime, and whichever is softer of these two, the other one just goes out with energy fraction z as before. And then I've got angle theta, and then theta prime is going to be less than theta. So my integral, well, I won't go through, but it's simple to see that RC is equal to alpha bar CFCA over 12 times L to the fourth. Okay? And that's the correct answer. That's actually. Sorry? Okay, you want me to do the integral? Okay. So it's integral epsilon to 1 d theta over theta, integral epsilon over theta dz over z, integral epsilon to theta d theta prime over theta prime, and then integral epsilon over theta prime to 1 dz prime over z prime. From these resolution criteria. So the only tricky point is that this upper limit is theta, and that gives you actually 1 over 24, this integral, times epsilon, log epsilon to the fourth. And so with all the other factors, you get a 12. So let me actually draw. What I wanted to do was to draw the integration regions, because we see that's fairly crucial in this game. So let's look at the first of all the abelian type graph here, this one here, and we're going to say what's the integration region for that in z prime and theta prime. So it's simple, theta prime is less than theta, so that's our one boundary, and then we're going to resolve this jet. So so z prime theta prime has to be bigger than epsilon, so that gives us a hyperbolic thing here, which comes down to epsilon here. So our integration region is this one here for that diagram. Now what about this one? So you'll see in a minute why I'm stressing these regions, because I'm going to look at other formulations of the shower which have been used in the past and see where they go wrong. So here again I have angular ordering, so I've got this limit here, but now my integration region is z prime theta prime has to be bigger than epsilon, which means that z prime theta prime has to be bigger than epsilon over z. So that's epsilon over z, which is actually a bigger number than this one. So this region is a bit smaller. That's why you get a smaller contribution, essentially, from this diagram. So those are the correct integration regions. And if you check, so they give you 1/12, as I said. And this one gives you, gives you the 1/4. But now let's consider what was done in other Monte Carlos.
Right.
Yeah. they've all been integrated out with these angular ordering, right? You mean the... Yeah, these are not Feynman graphs anymore. These are parton shower graphs, not Feynman graphs. Yeah.
I understand, but you the rules for writing down the integrals for A, simply B or C.
Yeah.
What about?
Because this is. No such thing, because that would contribute to an interference term which has been absorbed into the diagonal pieces in the parton shower. I mean, this is how the parton shower generates this cross-section, right? And it does it either by generating this cascade or this cascade. And that's all these diagrams mean, right? And it's a Markov process, so it's either this or this.
Well, you do take into account
the
interference
of this
color.
Yeah, sure, yeah. In the case of E plus E minus, this is all exact for these logarithms because this is QQ bar color singlet. Everything is diagonalized at every stage. So there's no approximation in the jet rates as long as you limit yourself to this logarithmic coefficient here. Leading double log, yeah. So now what was done in, for example, Pythia, although I will explain that Pythia does it better now, is that instead of angular ordering, it ordered in this KT, this relative transverse momentum. So it generated the hardest emission first in the sense of the one with the biggest relative KT relative to the jet axis or the quark here. However, you see, if you order KT, then what happens? So this thing has KT, which is proportional to Z theta, and this has KT, or KT over E, Z theta E, and this is Z prime theta prime E. So if you order these, then your region of integration is this one. Now it turns out for this diagram that's okay, because this region here has the same integral as this one here.
You get the line to York.
For the abelian graphs, yeah, but not for this one, because this one. So now we have KT ordering. So Z prime theta has to be less than Z theta. And that's all. So you actually have to have Z prime theta prime less than theta, which means, bigger, less than theta. So that's this line here. So now your KT ordered integration region is this one here. And so if you have, if I write the ordering here, ordering in theta, then for this diagram, we get this region here has five. It's the 24th because it's only half the contribution. The other one gives the right answer. So you get altogether five plus one, so you get the correct quarter CF squared L to the fourth. But this one, you add this extra piece here, which actually has an extra 12th. So you get, instead of a 12th, you get a 6th, which is wrong. So that's right and that's wrong. Sorry, that's KT. Theta gets them both right, right, with the 12th. KT gets this one right, but it gets this one wrong. So you can say, so what was done then was people said, well, okay, we'll KT order the shower, but then we'll, afterwards, we'll veto disordered angles. So we'll remove that region there. And then we get the right answer for this diagram. So that's KT plus theta.
Shower does it,
so you get the correct 12th for this diagram. But of course, now my region of integration is going to be this one here, missing this piece here. So you get 5 over 24. So it's still a bit wrong.
Not at all better than just KT.
So there's actually no way to get everything right if you do a KT ordered parton shower. Okay, so that's the point I wanted to make.
The reasoning which you make here for the leading knots, this translates one-to-one also to supplementing knots, to lock you?
Yeah, well, I was hoping to get to that. I mean, so the point is, now actually, so the first subleading log, we've seen that the terms we neglected were two collinear logs down. So we can keep the terms which are collinear and one soft log down by keeping the full splitting function inside the cone. In other words, instead of d theta over theta, dz over z, we will now have the splitting function here, and that will give us the correct coefficient of the collinear singularity when we have a non-soft emission. So actually, you can write down a generating function for the parton shower, which includes the full splitting function instead of this dz over z, which is our approximation. The 2ca dz over z or the 2cf dz over z is our approximation to the relevant splitting function. So so that was going to be this section here. So like the other speakers, I got about halfway through in an hour. But actually, rather than spend time on that, I think I would rather do the, since I've criticized Pithy, I would rather do the dipole shower and show you that. That's
before moving on to that, there's one thing. Just looking at this formula for R2, R3, and R4, at order alpha, you see that if you add up R2 and R3, you get unity.
Yeah.
At order alpha squared, they do no longer add up to unity at the log cube level. Is this...
They do, unless...
...that we understood what...
Yeah, well, let's talk about that actually before I go on just for a few minutes, because there's some interesting features of these jet rates. So I've done the double logs up to this order, and now, as I say, you can do the single logs, which come from the full splitting function and also the running coupling and the splitting of gluon into QQ bar, which is one log down because this has no soft singularity but only a collinear one. And so you end up with these terms involving NF and other terms one log down. Now, if you check the coefficients, then of course, by definition, so the sum of all the rates is equal to 1, order by order, both for these coefficients and for these. And of course, you notice that everything I calculated was to do with the leading term here, and these subleading terms, for example, in R2, come from the, so to speak, the no emission probability. These are expansions of the Sudikoff type suppression of R2, which is exactly a consequence of unitarity, in other words, a consequence of this relation order by order. So again, in the Monte Carlo, that's automatic because the probability of anything happening is 1, and so all these subleading terms are correctly included in the no splitting probability that's generated by the Sudikoff form factor. Now, another interesting thing is to look at the mean number of jets. Which you can easily do. You just sum these up with a weight factor of n. And you see an interesting feature here. If you look at the so the leading logs, so you get 1 plus alpha bar. And now I have this term and this term, which are equal and opposite. So I get 3 minus 2. So I just get this term here, Cf L squared. Let me leave out the single logs, although they're easy to do as well. And then I get, now in alpha squared, what do I get? I get in the double logs here, I get 4 times a half minus 3, so that's 2 minus 3 plus 1, so that's 0 coefficient for Cf squared. And in fact, the leading term is Cf Ca over 12, and if you do the 5 jet rate, Thomas and Goh have done exactly now, you get Cf Ca squared over 360, I believe. I've actually summed over n, so I've counted, just literally including the leading jets, although you can do the, just make sure I got the coefficient right. Yeah, so you see, now what's this? This is a half of 4 factorial, and this is a half of 6 factorial. So this is the expansion of a hyperbolic cosine. And in fact, the jet rate in leading double log is a hyperbolic cosine. The mean jet number is the following function in double log approximation. The mean number of jets goes like 2 plus 2 Cf over Ca times the hyperbolic cosine of square root of alpha SCa over pi times L. This is for fixed coupling. It's slightly different for in the running coupling, where you keep the single logs plus 1, sorry, minus 1. Yeah, you see. So that's a funny thing. You see, it goes asymptotically exponentially with L in this approximation. Actually, it goes, when you take the running coupling into account, it goes exponentially like the square root of L, but it rises faster than any power. And so that was, and also, you see, it only depends on Cf. So the diagrams that contribute dominantly are ones where you emit one gluon off one of the initial quarks, and then that gluon showers into anything, well, in this case, into gluons, and the subleading terms, all the subleading terms are associated with abelian type diagrams, or with diagrams where you have more than one emission. So that's a funny feature. The leading jet multiplicity is given by showers, which are all off one side of this kind. And they depend on square root of alpha s, which is kind of amusing until you realize that when you expand this, of course, all the powers are even, so you don't get any odd powers of the square root. So if I may, just in the last 5 or 10 minutes, I'll do the dipole shower, which is a way of doing the showering without explicit angular ordering, and shows you, I think, a very nice approach by the Lund group, which actually is a useful pictorial representation. So let's go back and consider the dipole shower. So we're going to, now again, we have emission from, say, associated with two lines, J and K here, in our process, and we're going to think of this as a dipole. So in its rest frame, we can think of J and K going in opposite directions, and this thing is radiated from this dipole, and then the transverse momentum of this gluon emitted from that dipole can be written in this invariant form, Pi dot Pj, Pi dot Pk over Pj dot Pk with the 2, in fact. And we're going to define also the rapidity of this gluon in the diquark rest frame, which again is easy to see. It's equal to half the log of Pi dot Pk over Pi dot Pj. Now, what's the phase space for this emission? Well, we want Pi dot Pj and Pi dot Pk, which are related to the invariant masses of these two systems here, to be less than Pj dot Pk. And so that translates into the following region, which I will represent now in a diagram with rapidity along the bottom and PT squared along PT along the axis, actually with a logarithm, but I won't usually write the logarithm. So the log here, and this is a logarithmic variable, so this region is just a triangle. And the apex of the triangle is the mass of the dipole. Q squared is 2pj dot pk. So we have Q up here. We have PT can be anywhere down here, but it's limited by the edges of the triangle here. Now, what happens if we emit a gluon at some particular PT and Y is that we have a point in this diagram. And now, of course, we can have a shower in which this, when you emit this gluon here, you form two dipoles in the final state, which can be treated now in the same way. And the radiation of each dipole can be represented then by drawing a phase space region, which has a kind of an added segment here. And the phase space for the dipole, so this is dipole, this is part on J and this is part on K over here, say. And then the phase space for emission from the IK, so this is PTI here, and this is YI. The phase space for this dipole from I and J is given by a line which actually goes on the back of this sort of dart here, as it's called by the Lund people. And then the IK dipole has a phase space which lies like this. And the rule, which actually then, to my mind, is a reflection of sort of sneaking in angular ordering into the dipole shower, is that, say, if J and K are quarks, then on this triangle here, the strength of the dipole is CF on the sort of in the plane of the blackboard. But when you emit a gluon here, this extra piece of phase space which becomes available for extra dipole emission has a strength CA over 2 on each side. So each side of the of this dart here radiates with CA over 2, and so you get the just the kind of and this, of course, is a rapidity region, so this is an angular region with a different strength from this one. So in the subleading color structure, actually the dipole has a discontinuity, just like the cones in the angular ordered shower. But the beauty of this is now you can order things in KT, PT here, and as you have successive emissions, you'll have extra darts growing out here and also over here. And you can actually think of ordering this diagram any way you like. You can evolve in PT downwards here, and then you'll have this one, and then maybe something comes off this gluon down here. And all these things have easily computed contributions to the jet rates and so on, which are correct. But you can also think of it as angular ordered. Angular ordering means rapidity ordering, and then you evolve it as two showers outwards from the middle. This is the central region, so this is the wide angle emissions, and then you evolve these two outwards like this, and then you pick up again all the contributions by angular ordering outwards each of these jets, and again you end up with a representation of exactly the same matrix elements squared in this approximation, but ordered in a different way. Now the only issue you can see is when it comes to, for example, discussing down here, this is some low scale where you stop the shower. I never really talked about that, but obviously you stop the shower somewhere at some low scale. In the case of the KT algorithm, then this is your jet resolution scale. So Q0 is what I called epsilon Q. It's your KT min. Down here, an interesting thing, you see that the phase space available, which is proportional to the number of jets, is actually a fractal curve here. And the length of that fractal is this. So instead of being L, which is the length of this baseline here, it's grown all this fractal stuff at the bottom, which gives it a length which rises exponentially. So that's kind of cute. Also, now you can discuss what's the momentum of this quark down here at this scale. It's evolved somehow, and it's evolved by recoiling against all these emissions. If you integrate over all these emissions, what momentum distribution do you get for this quark? And the answer is, it depends on how you distribute the recoils in these dipole splittings, which is not specified by the algorithm. So it's still a controversial question whether you get the right leading quark distribution in a dipole shower. As I said, we showed 20 years ago that the angular ordered shower gives you the correct anomalous dimension, which controls the high X quark distribution in this jet, but it's still somewhat controversial, although I think it's more or less settled that you get the correct leading behavior from this KT ordered dipole with the usual prescription, which is basically to assign all the recoil to the this quark over here and all of it to this one over here. But it's not obvious to me why you should do that in this picture. Anyway, I think, yeah.
Concerning the quark momentum distribution in the batch experiment, should this not in the dipole shower, the kernel which you would use would again be the full splitting function.
Yeah.
Should this then not be completely equivalent to what you did in the angular?
Yes. I think actually
I can't see for this specific observer, but I can't see where the two approaches should be different then.
No. That's right, but
it's the same,
but it's still
kernel, and in the case of the quark momentum distribution in the large X region, it's also the same phase space which you would be picking up.
Yes, of course, in the 1-2 splitting, it's always clear how the momentum is shared, right? But in the 2-3 splitting, I mean, it seems you have an extra arbitrary decision to make about how much of the recoil, recoil, you know. For example, I could give some to I and some to J and so on in some apparently arbitrary choice. But I think what
I agree with that. But if you are in the large X region. And the large X region,
yeah,
which is in fact already a fairly asymmetric splitting, then the dipole way of mapping the phase space should become the same way of mapping the phase space as you had in the angular order chart.
Yes, if you think about it.
I mean, quite in general, subleading logs in the dipole shower and in the angular order shower will be somewhat different.
That's right.
Specific observable, sort of the quark moment fraction at large X, they should be equal since the dipole mapping should go to the angular order mapping.
Yes, I think it's clear, as I said, that the prescription used does give you the correct leading behavior of this. The issue is what kind of logarithms do you get in higher orders? And they will be different. And the angular order shower gives you the right logarithms in higher orders, right? In fact, if you make this change of scheme with this K factor and so on, you can absorb them into the leading, at least the next to leading log. Whereas it seems at least Dokshitzer and Marcozzini claim that you get some weird logarithms in higher orders from this prescription.
Weird logarithms, sort of at the sub-leading logarithmic level, or at the sub-leading log level, so one log down and just higher power in alpha X.
Yes. The issue is, do you get this or do you get some other logs? You should get this, right, with the appropriate coefficient.
Yeah.
if you don't get that, then there's some, you've got a problem with your, but of course, from the double log point of view, these are very subleading, but nevertheless, there is a prescription for getting it right in the, with the anger order.
More general question about this kind of picture. So these Bund people, they always try, so they draw these pictures, be that for the dipole or for the Bund fraternization model. And then they insist of treating these lines as actually world lines of point particles.
Yeah.
Make any sense to you? Because these are, after all, soft, you know, these are soft gluons which are in no sense localized in space-time. Why should we believe this?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they like to think of a string, literally a string stretched all along here, and then the way they hadronize it is to use this string as a local source of hadrons. But to me, it's just a representation of the way of doing the shower. Okay, I think I've said enough. Sorry, yes, okay, Martin.
At some point, you made an audience.
Pardon?
At some point you made an RTC approximation.
Yeah, at the beginning, right.
So at what logarithmic accuracy does this measure? I mean, you get, I mean, in large and CF is the same as CA.
Right.
You're getting all the CFs correctly.
Yeah. All these we checked numerically 20 years ago, right? Now, I don't know the prospects of checking R5. The authors of the fixed order calculation can tell us that, but
so the L to the fourth, for instance, you get them correctly despite, I mean, the large and C limit would be different of what you wrote.
Yeah.
Correctly.
No, these are certainly correct, yeah. Because as I say, if you start with QQ bar, then you don't have to make a large NC approximation for the hard process. And then the shower, I claim, generates all terms with the correct coefficient, except those which are of the form alpha s, I mean, which are two logs down, right? So they're alpha s to the n log to the 2n minus 2. They're wrong, right? But the alpha s to the n log to the 2n and alpha s to the n log to the 2n minus 1 have the correct color structure, I claim. For a general observable, right? I'm just claiming that if you do enough azimuthal integrations, then all the correlators which are off diagonal will integrate to zero. If you start with appropriate initial state.
So the issue is that you have trivial color structure at the underlying bond.
Yeah.
Which is what allows you to go beyond the leading at zero.
Yeah. Now, whether you can do anything better if you don't have such a structure, I mean, just in terms of calculation, by choosing a basis and doing a more correct color expansion at the hard process level, I don't know. But,
could you spend two sentences on the implementation of hadronization now at the end of your shower?
Yeah. Okay. So hadronization. So we end up with all these gluons and so on, and as I've shown, according to the way they're generated in the Monte Carlo, we know their color factors. Now, of course, everything I've tried to do here has kept track of the CFs and CAs and so on, but when it comes to hadronization, I'm going to have to make a large NC approximation in order to have any simple way of deciding what are color singlets in the final state. And then, so in fact, for the purposes of hadronization only, I will associate, color anticolor with each gluon line, and I would draw a planar configuration corresponding to whatever the shower generated. And so now for the hadronization alone, which doesn't affect these things, I've thrown away some subleading terms, but now I can say, okay, I can make color singlets like this. And so in the Lund model you would call this whole thing a string, and you would associate the gluons with kinks on the string. In the cluster model, we literally say these are color singlet objects, so we will have a simple algorithm for decaying them directly into hadrons. And the interesting thing shown by Amati and Veneziano long ago is that the mass distribution of these objects defined in this way is actually universal. It doesn't depend on the process, it doesn't depend on the hard process scale, it only depends on lambda. It's a function of lambda QCD, leading order lambda here, of course, and the cutoff scale at which you stop the shower. So if you fix those, it doesn't matter whether you start what you start with, you will always get the same curve here. Of course, up here, I mean, there's a kinematic limit, which means the tail of this distribution can depend on the scale, but for the peak region doesn't depend on the hard scale. So we use this as a kind of proto-hadronic stuff, which we decay by a very simple-minded model, and that's the cluster hadronization model. Now, of course, some of these things have very big masses out here on the tail, and it's unreasonable to say they just decay isotropically. So in practice, these are sort of stringy things anyway, which have some orientation, like a dipole here. And so they decay by some longitudinal type of model. But that's the essence of these models, and they do, I think they have a lot of right physics in them, because they're saying that this color structure is fixed by the showering.
This distribution does not depend on the number of
this. No. No, of course the number of things you get in the final state depends on the hard scale, but the distribution of their masses doesn't. You could go back and, okay, and then you put in all these integrals, you put in some extra some theta acceptance, and then, all your integrals will be modified.
I'm concerned about this average in this.
Yeah. No, that's right. Obviously, some correlations are thrown away. All we can say is you have a huge ensemble of these final states with all kinds of azimuths contributing to your observable. Even if you put some acceptance cut, then hopefully the averaging is sufficient to make this approach. But I have no formal proof of that.
Can you try to say that if you do this averaging of these angles, which are kind of randomly oriented in space, in some sense you go beyond your acceptance, you can't control this
one. Yeah. Well, of course, I mean, that's usually an issue that, also you put minimum PT cuts, and these angular acceptances are large angles, so they're way beyond this approximation, right? They're neither concerned with soft nor collinear logarithms formally. So the part on shower is an approximation which is valid, as I've argued, for multiple collinear emissions, and in the sense that I've explained, tried to explain for multiple soft emissions, but for issues to do with hard wiring and angle emissions, you have to have a matrix element, a full matrix element. So it's about the internal structure of chess, where you hope, again, that this azimuthal averaging is reasonable.